Yes, indeed, it is good to be back. We've finished off the Christmas leftovers. We've done our New Year's Eve partying, so now a few kilos heavier and with possibly a slightly sore head, we are all ready to see what 2019 has in store for politics in Germany and Europe. I'm Damian McGuinness, and joining me for the first show of the year, looking remarkably fresh despite all the festivities, we have a few hardy Stammtisch regulars. Judy Dempsey is a senior fellow at the think tank Carnegie Europe. Nice to have you back on the show, Judy. Did you have a politics-free Christmas and New Year then?
Almost.
Almost.
Because we didn't stop naturally the subscriptions to the newspapers.
Yeah.
So we delved a little bit into the newspapers. But politics-free, with few exceptions, yes.
But no rows about Brexit over the turkey?
Oh, no, 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 no. None. We didn't have turkey either.
Good. OK, I like it. Did it continental style. Also here is Richard Jones, who reports on German politics for Bloomberg. Richard, were you out clubbing for New Year's Eve, or did you sit and analyse Merkel's New Year's Eve message?
Damien, I'm getting far too old for clubbing on New Year's Eve. But what I did manage to do over the past couple of weeks is really go off the grid and unplug from the main. So I've not been following the news closely at all. Purposefully.
Yeah.
So I feel quite refreshed and ready to take on 2019.
And as clueless as the rest of us on this.
Exactly,
podcast,
so yes.
That's what I like to hear.
Indeed.
And my BBC colleague, Anna Noriskiewicz, is also back on the podcast. Anna, what did you think of Merkel's New Year's Eve message? Most importantly, what colour jacket was she wearing? That's always what interests me most.
Shiny silver?
Silver. She has on glitzy in the past and gold, hasn't she?
I think so.
Is this significant for what the year
it's
has?
It's always a bit festive, what
right.
she has at the end of the year. But, well, I find it, actually, I always watch it the morning after. I never really watch it on New Year's Day or New Year's Eve.
So you do it with a hangover, just to
yes,
get the full effect.
Sort of. But I found it weirdly critical this year, self-critical this year. So,
okay. What did she talk about?
I mean, of course, the main issues, like which I found very good to focus on climate change and to get this migration chaos in order, and also brace ourselves for terrorism and that.
She was really focusing on this idea of international solidarity as well, wasn't she? It was almost like an anti-Trump message.
Exactly, and also Germany's responsibility in world politics and in security, which I found a bit...
You don't look impressed by that, Judy.
I'm not at all impressed by this. I mean, if I hear Germany must take more responsibility, whether it's the foreign ministry that says this or the chancellery, frankly, when push comes to shove, it's more rhetoric than reality.
Right. OK, we'll talk about that in a lot more detail over the next half hour. Before we do talk politics, there's one German New Year's Eve tradition which I'd like you all to explain to us. I'm going to play you a clip of something, and I'd like you to tell me what this is.
There we are, Miss Sophie, with the fish.
I think we'll have white wine with the fish.
White wine with the fish. The same procedure as last year, Miss Sophie.
Same procedure as every year, James.
Yes, Miss Sophie. Same procedure as every year. White wine with the fish.
Okay, what's that?
Childhood memories, dinner for one.
Yeah, exactly. So what is dinner for one? This renowned tradition in Germany, which people outside Germany just don't know at all.
It's a play? It's a
yeah,
it's from Britain or Scotland?
It's a short television play, black and white, and it's the story of an old woman, the butler. It's supposed to be funny. I've never got the gag myself.
She thinks that she's actually hosting a few of her good friends.
Lady Sophie or something, isn't
yes,
she?
Yes, so, but yeah. Lady Sophie, exactly.
And she's very elderly.
And I think they all died. They just didn't attend. So she's there by herself with the waiter, with the butler.
That's right.
And gets completely drunk. And he gets completely drunk because he's supposed to drink with her for every toast that she actually makes. So.
And the gag is that he just keeps falling over and gets really drunk. It's very slapstick, not very subtle. But all Germans watch it.
Yeah.
New Year's Eve, very famous in Germany, unknown in the English-speaking world. It's in English as well, which is weird.
Exactly.
People outside Germany don't know it.
I think when I first, my wife is German, when I first came over to see her family with her many, many years ago, this was on TV on New Year's Eve, and I was quite intrigued by it. So yeah. I looked into it a little bit, and the English actor, I think his name was Freddie Frinton.
That's right.
And it was recorded in a television studio in Germany. It's a wonderful German tradition. It's on, God, five or six times on all the different... State channels here in Germany, and we watch it every year.
What's the quote? The famous quote? Same procedure.
Same procedure as last year.
Or as every year. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's a Brexit comment in there somewhere. Okay, what's the other New Year's Eve tradition that can prove a bit dangerous in Germany?
The Pfannkuchen. Donuts. Yeah. What's interesting?
What do you do with them? Why are they dangerous?
Because you eat them.
Oh, I see. Right, dangerous.
And then fill them with all these sugar things. but in the run up to Christmas, you have the Stollen cakes, and you have a variety of cake, and then the climax is this kind of donut.
I suppose the level of sugar is dangerous for your heart.
Indeed,
that's true.
Indeed.
No, dangerous but on the something streets else. Of Berlin, New Year's Eve.
Fireworks.
Yes.
And it's
crazy.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Berlin is transformed into a war zone, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. And they're trying to stop it.
Okay, well, we do have a link here to the podcast. We have our very own firework here, not quite as dangerous as down in Neukölln on New Year's Eve. It's our very own Catherine Wheel firework, which producer Kate has made. The Stammtisch merchandise store is going full guns here. So you spin a wheel and the arrow will point to a particular topic which will be important for 2019. You have to guess what it is. We have little pictures here. And if you give me a decent explanation, I will give you some leftover cake from Christmas. We've got so much at home, I really have to get rid of it somehow.
Nice.
Okay, who would like to go first and give it a spin?
I'll give it a go.
Go on, Richard. Right, what's it pointing to?
That looks to me, there's an Eiffel Tower there, there's the Leaning Tower of Pisa, there's the Colosseum in Rome. This looks to me like it might be a reference to European elections this year.
Very good. Okay, here you go. Piece of cake for you.
It's sort of chocolate. Oh, that looks delicious.
Yeah, it's homemade.
Thank you.
By my 2-year-old and 5-year-old.
Fabulous.
So I can't vouch for how tasty it is, but... right, so tell me more about why the European elections are important for 2019.
Well, I mean, anytime I report or analyse the news, it's always through the lens of financial markets. And I think... if there's one thing that's really dominated financial markets over the past few years, it's politics. You know, we've had Brexit referendum, we've had the election of Trump, we had the French election, the Dutch election, the German election. Politics has been the driving force behind the financial markets over the past few years. And I think as populism has become something that market participants have to grapple with, the European elections will be a very interesting litmus test to see just how far advanced throughout Europe populism is. We know that in Italy we have a very populist government. We know that in France there's been populist pushback against the centrist Macron. I mean, in Germany, I would say that populism isn't as advanced as it is in other places. I mean, the UK voted to leave the European Union. Not the ultimate populist act.
So when you say populism, it's essentially anti-EU, I suppose, in this European context.
In the European context, I guess, yeah, it is anti-EU. It is sort of focusing more on the individual.
National Front, it would be pro-Brexit campaign, as you would say. It would be the Alternative for Germany, the AfD. Okay, so the AfD, is that the big story for the European elections for Germany?
No, I think for Germany, actually for the SPD, it's the European elections are going to be very important for the SPD. Because
okay, so the centre-left Social Democrats,
exactly.
Who are Merkel's coalition partners,
exactly,
running
yeah.
the government.
And I think if they do badly, I mean, you hear some, you know, some rumours that if they really do badly, then they might want to get out of the Great Coalition. And worst case scenario, new elections would happen, but...
So quit the German government coalition.
Exactly.
And then cause that to collapse,
yes,
and then spark new elections,
yeah,
if they do badly in European elections.
If things go really, really bad.
Right, so that's May European elections.
Yeah.
That's one to look out for, Social Democrats.
We have to keep an eye out on the Greens as well. I mean, they're on a high in most EU countries now, even in the Central European countries. So... being counterintuitive, we may be surprised about the election result. One thing, Richard, about...
So they might do well,
they might
saying,
do very, very well.
That's been the big story in Germany.
It has. Indeed, it has.
The ascent of the Greens.
But the fact that your little dial stopped on France and Italy, the Leaning Tower of Pisa and the Colosseum and the Eiffel Tower, actually, what it really means, it shows the two different views of Europe.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah,
the one led by Macron for more integrated Europe and the other led by the Italian right-wing, bizarre far-right-wing government, far-left-wing government that wants a Europe that is completely more central, more decentralised. It's very interesting, the competing views.
Yeah,
so it's the idea of the nation-state versus more integration within... more federalised Europe.
Well, I hate to say this, but this is such a slapdash slogan, you know, taking back control, as if decisions are made over their heads in most of the member states. I mean, there's open discussions by all the member states, but this has become such a facile slogan, but that's what it's about.
Yeah, back to national governments, away from Brussels.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's easy answers to complicated questions,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I think is driven Brexit. I think it's driven the election of Trump. I think it's driven politics in Italy in a very big way. And it'll be interesting to see if in the 2019 European elections, just how much sway it holds across Europe.
Okay, that's one to watch out for in May then. Right, who would like to spin the dial next? Yeah. Anna, go for
Let's
it.
Let's see. Oops, how do I do this?
I have to spin the cardboard arrow. It's nothing very complicated.
Oh.
What have you got?
Okay, I get all the flags from, well, this is Brandenburg,
yes,
Saxony, and
yes.
Thuringia.
Well done. You know your German states.
East yeah. German states.
I've only got one of those. The other two
East German elections in May 26th is European elections, I think.
Yeah. I think.
So East German elections.
They're coming up in the late spring.
Yeah, so late throughout spring. 2019, yeah. Effectively. So there's three big Eastern German states where they have their state elections. Why is that important? Internationally speaking, why should international observers watch this? Because we don't always focus on state elections, do we, outside of Germany?
Clearly, because the CDU has done so badly in the last elections in Bavaria and Hessen. So I think right
now... So the CDU is Merkel's centre-right...
Exactly. And I think now one concern in major East German states is definitely the rise of the AfD and actually their power. And here I think this is the campaign now for the East German elections will be AKK's Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer's first task, actually, because she will be, I think she is the one who will focus on campaigning while Ms. Merkel is focusing on the bigger subjects like the UN Security Council.
Because she, of course, has taken over the party from Merkel, and she is seen as the... Maybe she's going to be the next chancellor after Merkel. Who knows? Okay, I think you deserve a homemade biscuit for that, or cake, or whatever it is. There you go.
Well, thanks.
Tell me more about the East German elections, then. Why do state elections matter in general, and particularly these ones?
State elections... matter hugely because they dictate the kind of balance inside what's called the Bundesrat. That's the upper house. And that's where a lot of decisions are thrashed out if the Bundestag, that's the German parliament, cannot push through these decisions. So this constellation of political forces is very, very important. It sits in Berlin. And at the moment, Angela Merkel, the chancellor, has to watch out that her majority is still there. It's quite fragile at the moment. But anybody who wins the state election influences the kind of federal legal laws that go through. So don't think that the states are just confined to states and regional issues. They have a big federal issue.
So they have power nationally.
They have absolute power nationally. And the East German states are actually fascinating to watch because the far right wing alternative for Germany is doing very well. What is interesting is that the former Communist Party, the Linke, should be doing well, but they're ceding ground now to the AfD for many, many reasons, demographic, political. A lot of the bright young people have gone to the West, so it's left a vacuum to be easily tapped.
The one thing I'd say, too, maybe for our American listeners, is that you think of the state elections as almost being akin to a series of mini midterm elections like you have in the American cycle, and that it becomes not... directly a referendum on the national government, but there is some crossover there. And as Judy says, these state elections have, I think, some very important implications for the upper house of the German parliament. So there is, it's almost like a referendum on the governing national government, in addition to focusing on local issues and some of those dynamics that sort of feed into the national dialogue.
And then, of course, in Germany, they're important because a lot of services are run by the German states, aren't they?
Yeah, a lot.
Education, transport, all the important things. I think it's Judy now who's going to spin that dial.
Oh, jeepers. Here we go. Oh, now that looks like Heiko Maas. That's the German foreign minister who belongs to the Social Democratic Party. And he's great at giving very long speeches. And he tries to be modern and everything, trying to explain the great German responsibility and strategic role across the world.
What's his big thing right now?
Well, it depends. Actually, there's a lot of big things. One is...
I'm trying to think. I think the picture might be of him in a particular place.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so I didn't see. Oh, the little dial covered it. Well, the big thing is what role Germany's going to play now that it has a 2-year stint on the United Nations Security Council. They really messed it up last time, a couple of years ago, when they abstained over a UN mandate to go into Libya. And they abstained, and my heavens, did Angela Merkel and the former, now deceased, Foreign Minister Guido Westerwelle get a thrashing for this. In retrospect, they were right to abstain, because NATO, which took over the UN mission, did really leave a big mess in Libya.
But of course, from January the 1st, from a few days ago, Germany has, alongside the 5 permanent members,
indeed,
now a non-permanent seat on the UN Security Council, doesn't it?
It sounds very uncomfortable, a non-permanent seat, but they do have seats, actually. Now, the thing is, so the German mission in the UN released their statement, what they believe in, multilateralism, big surprises, human rights, big surprises, diplomacy, big surprises. It's really nothing new. This is the bedrock of the German Weltanschauung, the German outlook, but it has to go further if Germany wants to make a difference, given what's happening in the White House and in China and in Russia.
Does this give Germany more clout, though, to push its multilateral anti-Trump view almost?
First of all, the Germans don't want to play the anti-Trump card, and they cannot afford to. Secondly, the whole geostrategic complexity of politics now is so complicated that Germany actually wants to keep things stable. And this means trying to find common ground with China. It sounds a bit trite, but common ground with China, with Russia, and keep the US on board. It's going to be extremely difficult, actually. But actually, there are a lot of interests that Germany could push, one of them being multilateral trade, which is hugely important for the world economy.
Okay, let me give you a piece of cake.
Oh,
that.
Nice.
Nicely explained.
Oh, lovely.
Take a big
thank
piece.
You.
Or opposing, for instance, the deployment of middle-ranged missiles. If it was on the table, Germany would take a tough stance against these.
Exactly.
Because that's a big issue for Germany
exactly.
right now, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
This treaty that Trump is now leaving, or the US is threatening to leave, is going to affect Germany if mid-range nuclear missiles can be utilised.
This is true. I mean, Trump has this penchant for walking away from a lot of things. But let's just be quite careful about this. He has revived the trade agreement with Canada and Mexico. Okay, it's a new treaty, but it's done. Maybe. Remember, it wasn't the United States that walked away from the INF treaty in the first place. It was the Russians who threatened it. So maybe with a bit of German push and even more diplomacy, maybe we can find a new start to it. I'm not optimistic, but we can't live in this kind of vacuum. It's too unstable and dangerous.
Richard, I think you need another piece of cake, so you can spin the final dial.
It's great cake.
Good. I'll tell the kids.
We spun on to Theresa May.
I think she's dancing in that picture.
She is dancing.
Along to ABBA, presumably. Mm-hmm. Have a piece of cake.
Thank you very much.
John, you need some energy to talk about Brexit now.
Yeah. The B word. It's just not going away. Yeah.
No.
So there's going to be, I think, the big, ever since the deal between the EU and the British government was struck, or agreed to, the big thing has been getting it through Parliament in the UK. And that was not looking like it was going to happen in December. And so it was pushed back. We have a vote, I think, in a couple of weeks' time, the week of the 14th.
January 14th.
Yeah.
That's when British parliamentarians will have a vote on Theresa May's exit deal.
Yes.
So far, it's looking like the numbers are not going to...
The numbers weren't there in December, and I don't think the numbers are much more favourable for her now.
Which increases the risk of a no-deal Brexit.
Yeah, and that's the situation, again, from the... If I'm looking through the lens of the financial markets, that's the really scary one, because even with any contingency planning and anything that's done in order to mitigate the absolute worst-case scenarios, there's still an awful lot of uncertainty there, and so I think... and that's the default scenario if the deal isn't passed and the deadline comes up and nothing's agreed.
Which is 29th of March.
So
if nothing is agreed, then 29th of March, Britain leaves the European Union
without a deal,
which means suddenly all these legal entities are null and void.
Yeah, and so I think that is the big concern for a lot of market participants and even just, I think, the general population in, on both sides of the Channel and the Irish Sea.
It's not a massive story in Germany, is it? Really, it's being seen
it really
as
isn't.
It doesn't really play well with voters necessarily. Yeah. So it's not being politicised and talked about very much even.
In the Chancellor, it is. I mean, when the referendum result was announced, and when Chancellor Merkel came out just to make a statement, I mean, she was quite shocked by it.
Yeah.
Because what Brexit means, what a no deal means, is that it thrusts the limelight back on Germany in terms of its role in Europe, its relations with France, its relations with Poland, its relations within the EU, the strategic challenges being pushed onto Germany now because of Brexit are just enormous. It's really complicated and very interesting. I mean, there was always a London axis with Paris, or Paris with Germany, Berlin, or Berlin with London, depends on the issues, whether it was defence, whether it was economics, whether it was trade, whether it was competition. And they could always dance around each other. It was a very special triangle which reassured small countries and big countries. And this kind of ballast will be completely upset when London leaves. And a lot of Germany's eastern neighbours are very worried about this, because it's a residual fear of the German power, which indeed the Chancellery is well aware of.
It's been notable just how unified the remaining EU27 countries have been. That's like herding cats, right? That's a difficult thing to achieve. And it's remarkable how unified they've been. And I think the leadership of Germany and France in that way, where the Franco-German axis has kind of acted in unison on what's a pretty big issue, has surprised me a little bit. I have to say, I thought it would be a little bit more difficult than this. But so far, and I can't see it changing, there's been a remarkable amount of unity on the European side.
But is Germany being too complacent about what might happen if there is a no deal in a couple of months?
Yeah. Richard, turn it around the other way. There has been completely the unity among the 27. But Europe has been totally disunited over the Macron plan. So you have the Hanseatic, the so-called Hanseatic group of countries, which includes my country, Ireland. And then you have the southern countries, which are a bit more pro-Macron. The north is against Macron because they don't like his kind of plans for the Eurozone.
And essentially that means spending more on the Eurozone or not.
And having rescue plan and so on. And Angela Merkel has delayed. And so the momentum has been swept away from Macron's reforms. And of course, those populist governments must be delighted with this. And it's a pity, because I don't like this vision thing, but he thought strategically about the future of Europe, and it just wasn't old-fashioned Gaullism.
And what's the connection with Brexit here then?
The connection with Brexit is the following, that yes, the 27 have kept very firm with Brexit, because if you wobble on Brexit, it gives some member states the chance to hold their referendum and put in their bill to leave.
And it might undermine the single market as well.
Precisely. Yeah. In fact, the whole EU architecture, perhaps. And comparing it to Macron's plans, there's complete disunity. Nobody spells out what sort of plan they want for Europe except Macron. We know what plan we want for Brexit, a Brexit deal. As for what we want for the future of Europe, even Berlin doesn't spell it out, which is a pity.
So you're saying the EU27 is very good at saying what they don't want terms of change when it comes to Brexit, but they're not saying what they do want in terms of reform.
Nicely said.
Well, I'll make one final point. The one interesting thing to me is that it's almost like it's a series of questions being asked of the EU. The first one, and this is the Brexit question, and you can extrapolate it across the other 27, is it's an existential question. The existential question has been answered pretty affirmatively, and I think that's an important first step. Now, but that's the heavy lifting really starts when you've got to actually come up with a plan on what's next. How do we reform it? How do we move forward?
Because, of course, the deal so far is only the exit deal, isn't it? We haven't even talked about the future trade deal.
And the idea, where does the EU27 go in the next 2, 5, 10, 20 years? And those are the difficult questions to answer.
Any other key things that we should watch out for then in 2019?
I'm struck by lack of European intellectual, military and foreign capability and capacity to deal with the Americans pulling out the troops from Syria. It is an extraordinary decision, given that President Trump is so anti-Iran and the Iranian presence is so deeply entrenched in Syria. Secondly, that President Trump is so pro-Israel, and Israel is now scared out of its wits that Iran and the Saudis and Turkey and Russia will dictate the future of Syria. And where is Europe? Sleepwalking. It follows up our other point about the lack of disunity about Macron. Europe is paralysed and unable to think strategically and understand that if they want to be a global power, which they keep boasting about, they have to have really some idea on how to deal with its neighbours, and they don't have any.
That's a very good point, Judy. You get a piece of cake for that.
I'm going to hold for the moment.
Take one for the kids.
Oh, yeah, Oh, you're right. Thanks, Damien. Super cake.
I wanted to ask Judy, actually, about America pulling out of Syria. Do you think now with Germany and its role in the UN Security Council that they will want to become sort of a global player and actually intervene?
No, it's not in... The German public wouldn't support it. And there's still a debate about the future. What is the future of the Bundeswehr, the German Federal Army? And the fact that now there's a shortage of skilled people in the German army, that the German Defence Ministry is now considering inviting EU citizens to join the army, not in combat, by the way, but filling the shortfall. One tiny thing which is indirectly linked to the Syria aspect. My big worry is the future of democracy. Actually, the impact of social media manipulation on what China is doing, what Russia is doing to the fabric of our Western societies, and is certainly not helped by the US administration, or indeed Google, or Apple, or Facebook. And I think in some ways there is a sense in the German government that democracy cannot be taken for granted anymore.
Blimey, that's a big one, the future of democracy. It's still a bit too early in the morning for me for that. What about Germany's government? What should we watch out for in 2019 there?
First, we have to see how the SPD and also the Greens are going to do in the European elections.
And what's the weak spot, really, when you think about Germany's government right now?
The weak spot is that they don't want to make any decisions. Because, I mean, they can't go for early elections because the Social Democrats don't have any money to run an election, and their popularity is so bad they don't want to do any worse.
So they don't want to stay in this coalition, but they can't leave either, can they? So it's a bit of a trap.
First of all, the Social Democrats need a new leadership. They need a new face over. Come on, it's not rocket science having proper left-wing centre politics. As for Angela Merkel's Conservatives, the Christian Democrats, let's see how AKK manages. Yes. This is a woman who turned around a very poor state of Saarland, which borders with France. The steel industry was totally decimated. She turned it around. She did the town hall meetings. And I think you're right about this. She will do this in Eastern Germany. This is actually counterintuitively a chance for the Christian Democrats.
So you're quite hopeful for Germany's government then, lasting the year? Because, I mean, there are talk of fresh elections or early elections,
yes,
aren't there?
Yes, that's because people are bored with the government.
Collapsed. Yeah. Okay. Just out of boredom, we might have more elections. I don't know if I could cope if we have more elections. Okay, well, my final question is, on the last Stammtisch, we discussed our own New Year's resolutions. This week I want some more, but this time I'd like you to give me some New Year's resolutions for Germany's political leaders. What would you like to see them promise to do more of or less of throughout 2019?
How about governing?
more or less?
More governing. No,
Do the job.
I don't say that in a flippant way, but I mean, I think if you look at what's been happening since the last national election, it was a struggle to try and put together the Jamaica coalition, which fell apart because of political infighting.
So it took 6 months to get a government, didn't
it? Yeah, and then the SPD begrudgingly was dragged into a grand coalition, and there's been a lot of sort of, I would say, political infighting there. And then, of course, within the CDU-CSU, which is Angela Merkel's party and her Bavarian sister party, there's been nothing but infighting. And I think that the population has been looking at this and saying, look, we've elected a government. Get on with it. Don't stop fighting. Stop positioning for who's going to be the next leader and for political advantage. There's a job to be done here. It's a very important time for Europe, for Germany. We've given you a mandate. Get on with it. Because there's been just too much sort of like Berlin-centric political infighting. And I think the voters have just looked at this and shook their heads and said, no, this is not what we want. We want you to actually govern. And there's a lot of important things to do here. And it's an important time. So that's, I think, has to be the resolution number one is, and you know what? Angela Merkel, now that she's sort of taken the succession question away, maybe that will free her to then allow her to be more assertive and get more things done. And the SPD can play a very important role here. They've got some very important ministerial portfolios. They've got foreign affairs. They've got the finance ministry. They can play a key role and turn around their fortunes by actually doing something.
Okay, so the government should just get governing. Okay, that's a good resolution.
The SPD should figure themselves out. So because once we have a strong Social Democratic Party again, we won't have to worry too much about the AfD.
So your resolution would be for the centre-left to find itself?
Exactly.
Okay.
And also some people like Horst Seehofer should finally call it a day. I mean, this whole, you know, kindergarten last summer that really wasted everybody's, you know, time and energy on that migration row, I think he should just leave and somebody else should take over.
Okay, so more politics from some politicians and less politics from others. Okay, that's also a good resolution. Judy?
One.
Oh, you've got a list for us. Okay.
Short speeches of any speeches. Secondly...
You think of Heiko Maas, Foreign Minister. Possibly.
Secondly, indeed. Secondly, get out to the public and do town hall meetings. Stop sitting in Berlin. Stop giving these long-winded presentations and talk shows. Reduce the political talk shows. And the third thing is there's a political, not sense of boredom, but a kind of disappointment here. Make politics inclusive. Don't stick to the old, okay, we've got the AfD and the Greens and the Free Democrats and the Social Democrats and the Christian Democrats, but there's grassroots out there. Change the dynamics of politics and make it inclusive. Listen to people.
You see, I think the brilliant thing about the German political system is that's eminently doable.
Yeah.
Whereas in the UK, very adversarial first-past-the-post system,
absolutely,
where you don't have to build coalitions, it's more difficult to do that. Yeah. But it's easy enough to do in Germany. Not easy, but it is more doable in Germany. So there's no reason why that can't happen.
Okay, well, we will meet again throughout the year and check upon whether they're managing those resolutions or not. In the meantime, that's all from us for this week. Join us next Friday for more political chit-chat from Berlin. Thanks to Marvin in the studio and Kate Brady and Max Koschik for producing. Remember, do subscribe or leave us a rating or a comment. And most importantly of all, a very happy new year from all of us in Berlin.
Happy new year.
Sometimes I see